Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Stephanie Miner, former mayor of Syracuse, former co-chair of the New York State Democratic Party, and current independent candidate for governor. Welcome, Stephanie Miner. What a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So it turns out that you're a gutsy lady, and I wanted to ask you a question. Were you born that way, or did they tell you about how you were in the crib and all that?
Oh, well, I come from a long line of gutsy ladies, so there were certain expectations along the way, and I think it comes from a certain romance about government and politics and idealism, and that is what has charted my course. So some people see that as guts, and other people see it as just holding true to your values.
Some people, I think it's crazy.
Yep. Oh, no, there are a lot of people who say it's crazy.
But I think it's great. Is it about winning?
Of course. But it's also, you know, winning for the sake of winning is empty to me, always has been. I didn't get involved in politics or government for a transactional, you know, leap from one job to the next. I used to say to people all the time, you know, if I was just interested in power and transactions, there's a lot easier jobs than being mayor of the city of Syracuse. If I were just interested in power and transactions and stepping stones, there are a lot easier ways to go about my political career than I have done. I'm interested in solving problems and helping people and being an advocate. And often that means being an advocate at a time when other people have purposely stood silent because they felt it would detrimentally impact their political career.
Well, that certainly is something that we can say about you. Here you were the co-chair of the Democratic Party in New York State. You obviously have been handpicked and honored by the governor of New York. And yet you stood your ground when it came to getting stuff for Syracuse. And it wasn't an easy thing for you to do, was it?
You know, in many ways, it actually was easy because I loved that job. And what I loved about that job was representing the people of my city. And for me, it was very easy to say, this is the job that I was elected to do. These are what people expect me to do. And this is what gives me a sense of self, is to be their advocate. And that's what a mayor is an advocate. And you know, I was not stooping to conquer, and I felt they were not personal disagreements. They were all based in public policy. And I felt like that's the way you should have a system, where you have honest disagreements based on facts and a dialogue about that. And that's how you get better ideas and better solutions. And it was really stunning to me that the personal attacks and diatribes that came against me when I stood up and said, you know, borrowing for pensions is not a fiscally responsible thing to do. But what I quickly realized is that when they can't attack the substance of your position, what they do is attack you personally. And, you know, that gets very old. And I will also tell you that my constituents and people in the city of Syracuse have always supported me in being David versus Goliath. They've always appreciated that characteristic.
Indeed. What kind of profession do you have?
I don't know what is the proper verb to use. I am trained as a lawyer. I was a labor lawyer for 10 years in a private sector firm representing unions and pension funds. My license was on hiatus for the 8 years that I was mayor, and I reactivated it in January, I think, expecting that I would be doing some legal work as part of my post-mayoral life. I have not, because it's taken some different contours now, and thus I find myself sitting in front of you, but that's my training.
So, Mayor Stephanie Miner, let me ask you, why, I know this is a question you're getting now, but I'm going to ask it again, because a lot of people are listening. Why are you running?
You know, look, I think this is the perfect venue to have a longer discussion about it. I am a listener and a devotee to public radio and the forums that it brings to have long-form discussions. I'm doing this because I'm a romantic about government, and I believe in government, and I believe in democracy. And when I see policies that are put in place to serve special interests or a political system that is contorted to reward vested interests and then does a disservice to the people of our state, it offends me, and it offends my belief in government. And I think part of the most difficult thing about that, about being a romantic about government and, you know, reading Profiles in Courage and having that kind of expectation that that's how people view government, is that when you see what's going on now in our country, in our state, it is so disheartening because it rips away your romanticism and your belief in the system. I still do believe in that system. And I think that we deserve better and we can have better. And I think that given my track record and my history, that I'm somebody who can deliver that message and have it resonate.
Well, Stephanie Meyer, you are going to be running for a governor against an incumbent who told me a long time ago third terms are always difficult and getting elected. But obviously, you're doing this for a reason, and you must have a critique of the individual who is in the office. Not so much personal, but more, what has he done that's offended you?
Look, I have a public policy critique, and it starts from the fact that we've had 1 million New Yorkers leave the state of New York seeking opportunity elsewhere because they couldn't get it here. And I can speak firsthand from this being an upstater because most of those New Yorkers have been from upstate, but there have been a number from downstate as well. They left their families, their friends, their networks because New York could not offer them an opportunity. And at the same time, we're seeing public services, which we pay dearly for and have a high expectation about, crumble around us. You know, the most obvious example of that, of course, is the subways, but the Long Island Railroads have the worst on-time experience in their history. Upstate and downstate, we have deficient bridges, deficient, you know, a D-plus rating from the American Society of Civil Engineers. We pay more for healthcare, get worse results. We pay more for education, we get worse results. Over and over again, you see the public policies that are were put in place to help New Yorkers crumbling around us, and it exists parallel to this public policy of these gold-plated economic development projects that are rewarding developers and are abject failures and are used to replenish campaign coffers, give them fodder for reelection material, and then ignore the plight of New Yorkers.
Can a third-party candidate win?
Of course. Look, we're in uncharted waters right now. It's a very volatile environment. People have high expectations, and they are willing to do things that otherwise would have been thought as heresy. I mean, the idea that there's even conventional wisdom now about government and politics, and every morning when you listen to the radio, if you listen to the Morning Edition or All Things Considered, you can't help but have your head kind of scratch your head and think, this is the world that we're living in right now? And just as it can be volatile for perverse ways, I think it can be volatile in constructive ways, too. And that's the opportunity that I think we see here.
So we see a whole bunch of trials going on now. Today, Dean Skelos, the former majority leader of the Senate, is on trial. But Andrew Cuomo's name, let's use a name here, keeps coming up in all of this. We see Elaine Calieros is being defended on the basis that all he wanted to do, he wasn't going to get any money out of him, so all he wanted to do was get in tighter with the governor. We see a pay-to-play scandal unfolding all over the place. How do you stop it? I mean, how do you stop it?
Well, you have to do it on a number of different levels. The first is that we have to make it easier to vote in New York State. We have to have not true nonpartisan redistricting. We have to make it easier to vote so that, once again, elected officials are responsive to voters as opposed to responsive to campaign contributors. So you make it easier to vote, you have true nonpartisan redistricting, and then you eliminate the influence. You can't take it all away, but you eliminate the influence of campaign contributions. You say that we can no longer have anonymous contributions like LLCs. I stopped accepting LLC contributions in 2015 because I saw how corrosive they were to our democracy and to our system. And then you say we have to have a civil discussion now. Just because we may have disagreements on issues of deep personal importance to us, that doesn't mean that we should engage in name-calling or have our staffs engage in this toxic name-calling that has become part and parcel of our system. You know, as a mayor, I had to work with and had to try to solve problems with everybody. It didn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Green Party. You know, Howie Hawkins is a resident of the city of Syracuse, or a Liberal Party member. I wanted to solve your problems. And it often meant that I would have disagreements and they would have disagreements with me. But you learn that, you know, in a democracy where you have vastly different experiences and background, that as long as you can be civil to each other, that you can always go back the next day and try to figure out how we're going to move forward together. And that has been so lacking in our society. And I think as a result, we are seeing our public policy failures all across the board.
Now, Stephanie Meyer, some people are saying that the Cuomo people are already taking cheap shots at you. What's the best way to do that? Not engage. I often wonder about this. You don't engage, or you do engage, or you fire back. What do you do?
You know, look, it's very difficult. And I will tell you, as somebody who has spent 16 years trying to recruit, in particular, women to run for office, the first thing that every female candidate said to me when I asked them to run for office was, I don't want to get engaged in an environment where there's these ad hominem attacks. And male candidates that I have recruited also had that same feeling, that it is doing a disservice to all of us because people are saying, why am I going to expose myself to that and my children and my family who have done nothing about this? So it is a day-by-day decision that I think everybody who's in the arena has to figure out how to handle. I have been subject to personal assaults and ad hominem attacks virtually since the first day I took office as a city councilor, by wealthy developers, by people who didn't like the fact that I was contrarian and that I asked questions. And I have found that while it may be difficult in the moment, that the best way to do it is to respect yourself and say, I'm not going to engage in this, and try to overcome it, and remember that, you know, in 48 hours or 72 hours, it'll be a different environment.
Are you a tweeter?
I do. I do tweet. And I've seen, you know, I've seen things, and I like Twitter because I like the idea. I find it very helpful to see what other people are reading and what other people are thinking and engaging in it. And it's also, some people are very, very clever, and it makes me laugh. But it can get very vile very quickly, and I try to stay away from that.
So tell me about the party that you'll be running on. There's been some accusation it's a bunch of conservative Republicans. Is that right?
It is a group of people who, some were Republicans and some were Democrats and some were conservatives and some were liberals, but a group of people, and it's an organization, it's not yet a party, that has values and principles that say we should have civil dialogue, we should be fiscally responsible, and we should invest in community building, for example, investing in infrastructure. And so it's a group of people that they heard me on a podcast, and they reached out to somebody that knew me and asked if we could have a cup of coffee, and we engaged in a series of discussions. By the way, the same kind of discussions that you and I are having right now and that I had with members of the Working Families Party and members of the Democratic Party and people from all across the political spectrum. I think that perhaps one of the few positives in my mind that has come out of the Trump administration is a sense that people are remembering that they have to own their government, and they're thinking about what their role is and how to make it better than it currently is. And that's everybody. That's not just liberal Democrats. I think it's everybody across the spectrum says we want it to be better than it is. We want to end this hyperpartisanship. We want to end the toxicity of our politics. We want to have better public policy. And in order to do that, there are certain values and principles that we should agree on. And I found those values and principles to line up right with what I believe in and how I have tried to conduct myself in the 16 years as a public servant.
And what's the name of the group?
The name of the group is the Serve America Movement.
Let me ask you whether or not you're running, Stephanie Miner, may install a Republican governor because, you know, you take votes away from Andrew Cuomo.
The vaulted spoiler. All right, that's the argument. And what I have found and experienced is that the people who make that argument are the people who are benefiting from the status quo. And I will tell you that both party establishments here in New York State have spoiled the government and the public policies that we have. The culture of corruption that has been allowed to run rampant in Albany and has benefited both parties, and the collective shrug that has come out of the monthly, if not daily, announcements about corruption, FBI investigation, indictments, convictions. And you've seen both parties just just say shrug about it. That's unacceptable. And then when you couple that with all of the real suffering that is happening, the growth of poverty upstate, the failure of our infrastructure, a million people leaving New York State for opportunity elsewhere, you start to understand that the system needs to be shocked and disrupted. And people who talk about insider things like, oh, you're going to spoil, or oh, this is hyperpartisanship, or oh, you are a tool of this, they want to have that discussion because for them, that's much better than having the discussion about You haven't fixed the subway systems if you've been in power 8 years. Your economic development programs have been abject failures and are rife with corruption. You promised to clean up corruption, and we've seen more of evidence of it now than we ever have been. More people are leaving New York for opportunity elsewhere, spending more money on education, getting worse results, more money on healthcare and getting worse results. I mean, we're dumping raw sewage into our water systems. Our water mains and our sewers are breaking and crumbling beneath us. We have a D-plus rating from the American Society of Civil Engineers for our roads and our bridges. I mean, I could go on and on and on. The important thing, Ellen, is I don't have to go on and on because New Yorkers are living this reality, and that's why they want choices and they want recognition of the fact that the system is only working for campaign contributors and vested special interests.
So Syracuse mayor, how do you get into those five boroughs, you know, where so many people are? I'm glad you're not running in a primary because then it becomes even more difficult. But how do you get into the minds of people who know squat about state government?
Well, look, it's a challenge just like everything else is. But one of the benefits that I have, which I did not recognize, I'm embarrassed to tell you, I thought when I first got into office it was actually a detriment, which is I look very different from any traditional candidate. I'm not from a political family. I'm a female. I am relatively challenged in terms of height. And all of that I thought was a detriment to having a political future. But what I realized later than I should have is that the very look of me and the very sound of me represents change. And that's what people want. And so I think people from New York City are equally hungry for real change and want somebody who is going to be effective and really solve the public policy problems that they have. And so one of the assets that I have is I can go to them and say, look, I promise you, you change. I'm running on a line that represents change. I have a track record of being an agent of change. And if you want that, this is a way to go.
Talk to me about pay to play. We see all these trials going on now. We see Andrew Cuomo has collected over $31 million the last time we saw. And I know I heard yesterday that there was yet another fundraiser for him. And the top ticket was $50,000 a ticket. It's disgusting.
It is. And look, I think it's, I've been saying this, I think the people of the state see it as a green badge of corruption. He can raise all of that money. Day two of the trial, and he's having the only appearance that he's making today is at a private fundraiser at $50,000 a head. That's not going to erase the reality that New Yorkers are living with failed public policy. But let me talk about pay to play in the reality of pay to play. We have a system now where politicians are more beholden to, are more interested in serving campaign contributors than they are in the people who vote for him. And I have seen this and experienced this firsthand. I can't tell you how many times I had a conversation with an elected official where I brought up an issue that a constituent has and said, you know, this is something that I think you better think about because they are going to come to you seeking an answer and they're pretty upset about it. And that the state official said to me, well, I've raised $1 million, so it doesn't matter. And it's just, it was shocking to me. But after a while, it wasn't shocking. After a while, you realized that the innate visceral reaction of state and federal officials is to say, rather than thinking about how can I communicate with this constituent, how can I think about a problem, how can we work on this, it is to say, I'm going to have so much money, nobody is going to be able to defeat me. And that, for me, is the fundamental problem of the system that
and
we have.
And so Andrew Cuomo, let's say he's saying that. I have over $30 million. You won't be able to turn the television on without seeing his face or the radio. And you've just said that's what they think.
Yeah.
Are they wrong?
Look, that's the status quo. But I think that there is this big energy and dissatisfaction with the people in the state to say we have higher expectations. We want better standards. We want better public policy. And $30, $40 million is not going to erase the fact that 1 million New Yorkers have left, erase the daily challenge it is for New Yorkers to get in and out of Manhattan to work with the subway system and the Long Island Railroad and, you know, Metro North crumbling around them. Is not going to erase the fact that people in Rensselaer County, when they go to get a glass of water, wonder, what's the PFOA count and what is it doing to my family and my children? People in Albany and Niagara Falls are reading about raw sewage being dumped into our theoretically clean waterways. I mean, that's all. It surrounds everybody.
Stephanie Meyer, let me ask you real quickly about the attorney general's race. Schneiderman out. The Democratic Party has laid hands on one individual to run who, it seems to me, is pretty well attached to the very people who are running the state right now. So you get a Cuomo or somebody like that who supporting her. Isn't that a dangerous situation not to have an AG who might have to put somebody in jail someday?
Well, I think we're seeing every day, you know, that we need to have an attorney general who understands the pernicious impact that corruption is having on the lives of New Yorkers. And that's, I think, a question that every attorney general candidate should be asked and judged on the merit of his or her responses to that.
And you got a favorite?
I don't.
Okay, let's go on to the Republicans in the state Senate. It's always been my contention that the day that Andrew Cuomo didn't want the Republicans owning the state Senate, he would bring them into a room and he would say, cut it out. And when things got really rough, that's exactly what he did. It was, to me, a disgrace. I'm wondering how you can have a state that is overwhelmingly Democrat and have a Republican state Senate that draws their own districts.
Absolutely. Well, you have it because you have backroom deals. And again, the idea that policy matters is second to raising campaign contributions and doing these kind of Byzantine maneuvers. Look, I supported the IDC when it first was put together because I thought it was the first step in reform. And that's what I was told, and that's what my expectation was. And I was, you know, beyond disappointed to see that it wasn't, and then beyond disappointed to see how it was manipulated. I also have to tell you that I chuckled to myself that this same apparatus that put the IDC and the Senate Republicans together is now, you know, exuding talking points trying to say that I am somehow beholden to Republican interests.
Right.
There's a difference. You know, the difference is I have an open and honest disagreements and relationship with John DeFrancisco. He's a Republican and I am not. He believes in certain things that I don't believe in. But we have always been able to have civil dialogues and fact-based discussions and understandings and disagreements. And the second you subvert that to transactional power-based relationships, you get what we have now, which is a system that is working for the vested special interests and has put the interests of solving New Yorkers' problems secondary to that.
So I only have a minute left, but I want to ask you this. We see this whole immigrant situation. We see the tragedy of these children being separated. I wondered if you could give us some thoughts.
It is beyond disgraceful, and it makes me sick to my stomach. And I always felt, again, I'm a romantic about government and romantic about our country and a patriot, and I always felt that we were better than this. And seeing that reminds me that we like to think that we are an enlightened nation. And when you are ripping away children from their parents, you know, my faith, we would say it's a sin. And I am ashamed that that's what has gone for public policy in our country. And I'm also disgusted the fact that people in Washington can stand up and lie about who's responsible and what's responsible for it and allow it to just continue, it seems, unabated.
Well, Stephanie Miner, I've been a big admirer of yours for a long time. I think you're a gutsy lady. I live in Massachusetts. I was here. I would love to be able to vote for you.
Well, thank you.
Nevertheless, we are out of time today, and I hope that you'll come back and talk to us again because it's
a great
pleasure to have you here. Our guest has been Stephanie Miner, former Syracuse mayor, current independent candidate for governor. Again, Stephanie, we are so honored to have you with us, and thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. We'll be right back.